Ah, hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome to my channel. Anyway, I'm talking about Alistair Darling, who died just a few days ago. So Mr. Darling, he was best known for being Chancellor of Exchequer 2007 to 2010. So it was under his watch that the United Kingdom slid into one of those painful recessions for decades. And for achieving this disaster, bringing about this disaster, he was ennobled. So the price of failure is high for cabinet ministers. He was raised to the peerage as Baron Darling of Rulanish. So he's born in 1953, the same year as Tony Blair. And he's died at the relatively early age of 70. It was actually just 2 days after his 70th birthday. So he was born in Londinium to North British parents. And thence he shifted. His dad was a civil engineer. Indeed, his great uncle had been a unionist member of parliament just after the Second World War in Edinburgh, and had been Lord Provost, that's to say mayor. In Scots cities, they tend to say provost rather than mayor. So Darling, he went to school in southern England. Latterly, he went to Caledonia, attended Loretto, a school a little bit to the east of Edinburgh. His only other famous old boy is perhaps Hugo Rifkin, the well-known journalist, son of Sir Malcolm Rifkin, the former Conservative Foreign Secretary. Or who else? Michael Baver, the well-known headmaster, went there. Founded the site of some sort of an ancient medieval monastery. Not a terribly academic school, all boys, and the kind of bourgeois intake rather than upper-class intake. So despite being an egalitarian, he did not leave that school. You know, he railed against privilege, except, of course, when he was enjoying it himself. So, but my parents sent me there. Well, first of all, in his day, you could leave school at 15, walk out. You couldn't be compelled to go to school. You could have got yourself expelled. But anyway, he was a hypocrite all the time, a supposed socialist who was a very acquisitive capitalist who died a very wealthy man, I'm told a multimillionaire, which you'll see when his last will and testament is published. As usually the case with leftists, he probably will not have given a bean to the needy, given all of it to his already rich children, just like Viscount Stansgate, that standard bearer of the far left, who was an extremely avaricious and acquisitive capitalist, died a multimillionaire and never gave a penny to the needy, despite his much vaunted compassion for those who were suffering penury. Anyway, he went to the University of Aberdeen. It was not a terribly good one in Scotland, involved in student politics there, was a communist at the time, and he was disseminating Marxist literature, decrying British democracy, wanting to turn the United Kingdom into a tyranny like Mao's China or the Soviet Union, with slave labor camps, mass execution, industrial scale torture, things like that. No freedom of association, no freedom of conscience, obviously no freedom of expression, no fair elections, no right to leave the country, anything like that. But fortunately, his dystopian vision did not come to pass. So he qualified as a solicitor, and later he was called to the Scots bar, became an advocate. Because in North Britain, they're called advocates. They're not called barristers, but that's the equivalent profession. In the Republic of Ireland, we call them barristers. Anyway, so he was a local councillor in Lothian. That's the region surrounding Edinburgh, but excluding Edinburgh itself. We used to say East Lothian, West Lothian, Mid Lothian. Mid Lothian is largely Edinburgh. So then there were rates capping laws, as in that's about the local tax, council tax, we call it, how much you could raise it. But he was elected for Edinburgh Central in 1987, a year where the Conservatives swept the United Kingdom. The Labour made minimal gains. They came up slightly from the cataclysmic result of 1983. He unseated the sitting Tory member for that parliamentary division, Sir Alexander Fletcher. And he retained that seat until he stood down. So anyway, he was married. He had two children. He was in the shadow cabinet. He was recognised as, you know, one to watch. Rising fast, became a relative moderate shadow chief secretary of the Treasury. Because remember, the Treasury, as in the finance ministry of the United Kingdom, is unique in having two cabinet ministers. He's got the Chancellor Exchequer, and he or she, I think so far, it's only ever been a he, bizarrely. The only cabinet office never been to be held by a female, is in charge. And there's a number two, because it's so important. And the second in command is that chief secretary to the Treasury. Anyway. So he was in cabinet all the way through the Blair and Brown years, but it was Secretary of State for Transport for a while, Scots Secretary, which by 2003 was largely a dead letter because, of course, the Scots office was largely redundant in as much as the Holyrood Parliament had been reopened, having been adjourned, you know, how was it? Was it 290 years earlier? So many of its functions had been simply absorbed by the Scots executive. Well, now it's called the Scottish Government, Secretary of State for Trade and Industry. And then when Tony Blair finally stood down and Gordon Brown finally became Premier, then that was what's-his-face, old darling, was promoted to Chartered Exchequer. So there had been all this growth under Blair on the basis that things could only go one way. A lot of it was by sort of hugely evading the house prices, and it was a bubble that was bound to burst in the most spectacular way. And that's when they vacillated. Would they call an early election? Labour had a significant lead in the polls, but you know, he lost his courage at the last minute, Brown, even though he would have won it. But the Labour Party was staring bankruptcy in the face because somebody had torn up their membership cards over the liberation of Iraq. A lot of socialists desperately wanted to keep a genocidal tyrant, Saddam Hussein, there slaughtering ethnic minorities in Iraq. And they were rancorously disappointed that the people of Iraq had freedom and human rights that they'd never had before. Anyway, so 2 months after Darling became Chancellor of Exchequer, that's when Northern Rock, that bank, went bust. And so they managed to steady the ship for a while. But about a year later, October 2008, there was this the credit crunch, this wave of recessions all across the globe. Now, admittedly, it was not solely a British malaise, but Her Majesty's government, as it then was, obviously had to bear some of the responsibility for all that was going wrong, for funny money, for these private finance initiatives, when supposedly the NHS got better, but they just things were sold off to foreign companies, these public-private partnerships, and therefore to build and maintain hospitals became hugely more expensive. They were just pushing it down the road. So, they brought in management consultants of the civil service who were charging, you know, telephone number sums for giving them inane advice. And Alistair Darling was part of all this mumbo jumbo. But anyway, he said the scariest moment is when one of the banks from Scotland phoned to say they're going to run out of money that afternoon, and that they had to bail out the Royal Bank of Scotland. So there's a huge rescue package, stimulus spending. They brought forward some construction projects. And so obviously the UK was in recession late 2008, 2009, 2010 actually returned to growth, but it was too late. Labour was sunk, lost the 2008 election. It was their worst result in terms of share of the vote since 1983, reduced to only 28% of the vote. Not that bad in terms of seats, not compared to what they got in 2009, even though 2009 they got 32% of the vote. But Darling, he decided to bow out of the House of Commons at that point. He'd been abusing the expenses massively, redesignating his second home four times in 4 years and things like that. So the person who was supposedly caring about the poor was obviously ripping off people on minimum wage and benefits claimants in this. Fair enough, most MPs did it. Conservatives, Liberal Democrats, SNP, they're all just as bad as each other. But it's really disgraceful for him, who's always vaunting about his concern for the needy. So that was him. He has been called to his reward. Now, the one thing I do thank him for is when there was this splitter's proposal to break up the United Kingdom, he rose to the challenge, and he gallantly and persuasively advocated that Scotland should stay where it is, free, democratic, and in the United Kingdom. And indeed, he carried the day. And he was worth some weight in Scotland. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. So make sure you subscribe on Patreon and donate on PayPal, and see thousands more videos behind the paywall on Patreon. Goodbye.